Today on the Travel Guys.
It was the most memorable day of Notre Dame football Saturday with two weather delays and lots of excitement. And we have a live report from our group that was in South Bend next on the Travel News.
Cruise lines didn't all handle that hurricane equally. We'll tell you who passed and who failed when the chips were down coming up at 2:15.
At 2:35, what is it like to be in the travel business for a living? Tom asked the questions, Clayton and I provide some answers in a pretty insightful segment.
Finally, in the entertainment segment, we'll introduce you to the Boston Pops Orchestra and tell you two ways to attend their famous Christmas show in Boston this December. All that coming up on The Travel Guys.
On the road again. Just can't wait to get on the road again. I'm a traveling man,
king of the road.
Riding on the city of New Orleans.
Kicks out on Route 66.
That's entertainment.
Let's go on with the show.
Welcome. This is the Travel Guys and Entertainment Radio Program. It's a nice looking Sunday in Sacramento, and today's show is going to be a little bit of a potpourri. It's going to be some live and some, well, you're just going to have to figure it out. As you probably know, if you've been listening to the show, I have Mark in Notre Dame with Kelly Brothers on a very special trip. Mark, are you there?
We are. Actually, we're in Chicago, Tom, as we start to make our way back to Sacramento. In fact, we are right now at a Route 66 landmark, Del Rey's Chicken Basket, right along a stretch of old Route 66 right along the interstate here, and getting ready to head out to the airport.
Oh, bring me back a couple of drumsticks, would you?
Yeah, and the macaroni cheeses, and cheese is particularly good. Of course, things are beautiful in Chicago today. It's 72 degrees. There's a light breeze blowing, but that wasn't the case yesterday, either in Chicago or on the other side of the lake over in South Bend, as we experienced two weather delays during the ball game in a football game that, when it finally was finished, lasted almost 6 hours.
And all your fans and friends here in Sacramento that were watching that game on TV, we were feeling for you. What was it like?
Well, they sent the folks out of the stadium once, Tom, and then were able, after 2 hours, to resume the game. Another weather system came about, and then they sent suspended play again. Finally, we're able to finish. It was a most strange affair, but the Notre Dame officials had a specific reason for what they did, and I thought that it's something that really hasn't been well reported in the news. As you know, Kelly Brothers is with us on this trip with a lot of his friends and followers, and we have had a really good time seeing the Cubs on Friday and then all of that spectacle yesterday. But I thought maybe that it would be good to bring Kelly in and let him tell you a little bit about perhaps why the Notre Dame officials were so cautious yesterday when they suspended play twice.
All right, we'll put Kelly on. Kelly, are you there?
Yes.
Good to hear from you, buddy. Why don't you explain to the listeners what went on there at the stadium and why?
Sure thing, Tom. Yeah, well, obviously the severe weather did move in, but I think knowing the backstory of the last year or so in Indiana is very insightful. First of all, it was just a few months ago when spring ball was on. The football team was practicing spring ball, and a severe weather system moved through, winds of 50 miles an hour, and there was a young man at Notre Dame, a student named Declan Sullivan from just outside Chicago. He was taping the practice. That was his job. He videotaped practice for the coaches. And he went up in his lift, and his lift was toppled by these 50-mile-an-hour winds. Declan, tragically, was killed in that incident. And not only that, you have a situation where it was just, I believe, 2 weeks ago. We're at the Indiana State Fair, just, you know, 120 miles south in Indianapolis. Severe weather started to move through. They did not pay a whole lot of heed to some of the warnings that were up. The winds blew down part of a stage, and seven people were killed. That was just a few weeks ago. So I think there was an awful lot of caution out there, no doubt about it. But when you understand those two tragic fatal incidents in the last year, I think you can understand why.
Wonderful. Thanks for that update. I know a lot of folks don't have that history. Kelly, everybody having a good time?
Oh, we're having a great time. I mean, Chicago is an unbelievably beautiful city, Tom. The architecture, the parks, the waterfront. The Cubs game was great. Notre Dame was fantastic. I mean, as I told some of the crowd here yesterday, hey, it might not have gone the way we wanted to, Notre Dame fans anyway, but it certainly is memorable. There's no doubt about it. We're going to remember this for a long time, because in all the years I've been coming to games, I've never seen one evacuation of an 80,000-seat stadium, let alone two in the same three-hour stretch.
Well, we'll look forward when you get back, be on one of the shows in the future, and we'll go through details and talk about all the stuff that you got to do, okay?
Looking forward to it, Tom. We'll see you in SAC.
All right, fabulous. Coming up on the Travel Guys, our cruise critic joins us here on News Talk 1530 KFBK.
Just sit right back and you'll hear a tale of a faithful crew.
You're listening to the Travel and Entertainment Guys.
Aboard this tiny ship.
Ah, the ship song. Mark, I thought this might be appropriate to lead into our special guest today on the show.
Carolyn Spencer Brown from CruiseCritic.com. Good afternoon to you.
Hi, how are you guys?
Oh, very good. Very, very good. And that was very creative there, Mr. Romano.
Thank you. One of my favorite shows, and I have never cruised, and, you know, this may be it.
You should ask your readers, you guys, what is your favorite travel show? Like, which show, what sitcom or drama ever inspired you to travel?
That's a great one. You know, Love Boat, there's a great one for the cruise folks, huh?
Titanic?
Yeah. No, not good.
Titanic, absolutely. I just want to get off. Before it goes down. You know what I'm saying?
That's it. So, Carolyn, you had a reason we tracked you down today is because you wrote a column this week in which you kind of unveiled the response, if we can, of the people who the cruise lines last weekend. Big storm. A lot of people stuck in different places and itineraries changed at the last minute. And, of course, not everybody can predict when those things are going to happen. But sometimes we tend to judge people based on their response to those difficult situations.
Well, I think you should judge the companies, especially travel companies, on how they respond to a situation which, in this case, the Hurricane Irene, where they've got experience in dealing with them. You expect that they are going to respond in some appropriate way. And I want to shout out to my colleague Dan Askin, who wrote this story, because I was caught in the hurricane and couldn't get back. But Hurricane Irene's Heroes and Zeros, and the story was six cruise line crisis responses, and some were heroes and some were zeros. And the story really was interesting because the storm hit major cruise ports when they were embarking passengers. It wasn't just that they had to get out of the way of the storm as it went through St. Thomas and they could just go to another island. I mean, these were places where people were flying in, mm-hmm. they were boarding the ship, and it was complicated. It started last weekend with San Juan on a Sunday, and it continued to be a terrorizing thing this weekend because it hit the major New York and Boston area ports, which are right now in high season. So it was a particularly complicated storm.
So you wrote that even in San Juan, and at least people say that we're not painting with a broad brush here because we need a couple of different brushes to create this palette. Even in San Juan, there was a difference between how one line responded and how another line responded.
Yeah, and what happened in San Juan to me is a very telling story. So what happened in San Juan is that the storm was approaching. The port said to Carnival, which had Carnival Victory, and Royal Caribbean, which had Serenade of the Seas, you guys are going to have to leave early. And the challenge with San Juan is that ships typically leave very late at night from San Juan, not just because there's great nightlife, which there is, but because the airlift to San Juan isn't what it is to Miami or Fort Lauderdale. And so you need to give people plenty of time to get there. A lot of people are connecting flights, and you need to make sure you have enough time for all the planes to get in. So here the port says, you guys got to leave early. There's nothing the cruise lines could do about that. They had to get out of the port. So what the difference was the people who showed up, some 300 people showed up expecting to board Carnival Victory in San Juan, and they got there and they were told the ship had to go, sorry. But what Carnival did was fantastic. Carnival got a hold of everybody. They had a team at the gate to kind of help people find hotel rooms. They paid for the hotel rooms, which they didn't have to do. They paid for their flights to the next port of call. And so, yeah, it was a bummer you missed a couple of nights on your ship, but they really got taken care of.
But that was the best that realistically anyone could hope that someone would do for them under those circumstances.
So beyond. I mean, again, all cruise lines have the right to say if it's weather-related, we don't have to do a darn thing for you. And that's what Royal Caribbean was counting on. Royal Caribbean, in a complete opposite response, same port, same issue, left early as well, but it didn't leave anybody to help people except for the people who had bought its Air C package. So there are 130 people who showed up and were basically told, you know, you might find a hotel over here, and you got to get yourself to the port. And, you know, a hurricane is bearing down on San Juan. It's bearing down, and you've got people standing at the port with their luggage to find out, one, they find out their ship's gone without them, and number two, and they're not late.
Right.
And number two, nobody ever tried to contact them until they got there. And number three, they didn't even have a hotel room waiting for them. I mean, I thought that that was a little bit – no, I don't think that was a little bit. I thought that was the worst – and I've said this in the story I wrote – the worst case of customer service in a travel crisis I've seen in 14 years of covering the cruise industry. I'm still stunned. I am still stunned that Royal Caribbean didn't even make an effort to text people or email people or call their next of kin or do something to let them know that there was a potential problem. I'm stunned, and our readers are stunned to the tune of 45,000 page views for one forum. We finally had to close it. 700 responses. I mean, it's a huge issue, and it's a big picture issue. It's not just that this happened, but how could it happen?
That's crazy. And remember, our listeners can go to travelguysradio.com. We'll have a link to the Cruise Critic and to Carolyn's article, because it's definitely worth the read. There's some great information. Learn a lot about the different cruise lines and how they responded. This is great stuff.
Well, and I think also that you might be interested to take some time and read some of the comments that people posted, because it really does. In situations like this, I know my own customers are very much this way. Anybody can operate a tour from day to day when everything is wonderful and the sun is shining and it's 72 degrees outside. It's when the going gets tough, there's some type of traffic problem or weather problem or some sort of logistical problem with something that isn't there. That's when your customers tend to judge you. And so I think that the cruise lines have done themselves either a huge favor or a huge disfavor. And that's why it's important that there be websites like yours so that these things can be communicated among people who might potentially be buyers of these products.
And one of the things I think that has come out of it, I think is a bigger discussion and should come out of it, is there's like the airlines have a system. You know, I was on a recent Continental flight, and we're at the gate, and I'm sitting there, and I get a text message that the flight's going to be a half hour late leaving. I knew before the flight attendants knew, but I knew. And why isn't there a system in place, or there should be a system in place, if something's going wrong in your port, whether it's a port of call and you're out playing golf, and all of a sudden the ship has to leave because the storm's coming, that they can get a hold of you. The thing that really resonated with our readers, whether they were Carnival fans or Royal Caribbean fans or neither of the two, was that Royal Caribbean's official statement was, we didn't have time to get in touch with people. But Carnival had time. And they had the same amount of notice. So I think that they didn't even bother to try was something that I have to tell you, there's something systemically wrong at Royal Caribbean if that's the way they treat their customers. And that is what people responded to.
Well, I'll tell you, Carolyn, I love the way that you just, you paint the picture and you tell it like it is, because really, like you say, they both had the same information and one responded completely different. How would you account for that?
You know, it's hard for me to admit this, but I am mystified. I am mystified that Royal Caribbean behaved in the way it behaved. I'm not usually so hard on a cruise line, and I love their ships, and I love Royal Caribbean's onboard experience. But this is inexcusable.
Yeah, but this is more than just a minor snafu. You left people in a situation. They left people in a situation in a hurricane with not only no support staff or anything. They basically ran for cover and said good luck to you. I mean, they didn't even have anybody there to say good luck to you.
Yeah, I mean, really, that would have been something. I think you know, the thing is to remember is that cruise lines, when something is weather related, you know, cruise lines don't have to do anything for you. If hypothetically you were you bought an Eastern Caribbean cruise, and the week you were going, a hurricane was kind of swirling around out there, the cruise line can make it a Western Caribbean cruise with a completely different approach and not owe you a penny. And I'll tell you another example was, and this was not a bad handling example, but it's Royal Caribbean again, it wasn't a bad thing, but passengers a couple of years ago bought a cruise to Bermuda. And when they got on board, it looked like there was a storm coming through Bermuda. So the cruise went to New England, Canada. Now, you know, those are two different regions, two different experiences, but the cruise line did not have to give you anything. So understand, when you're taking a cruise in hurricane season, you are taking a risk. What you get as a reward is you get generally cheaper fares than the rest of the year. So I think you have to make sure you're okay with that.
Carolyn, is there a word of wisdom here to people? I mean, you've maybe perhaps just hit on it there. You made a trade-off. You went during a season where there was a little more risk, and perhaps you paid a little less money for it, and that was your trade-off. But if you had been about to depart on a cruise and you had faced this situation, were there any steps that you would have taken before you took off?
I'd get there a day early, for sure, in hurricane season. I would make sure that I...
And that's probably good wisdom, no matter, not even
cruise,
just,
frankly.
Yeah, any kind of cruise. Because
I find I get nervous if I don't do a day before. Even in the best possible weather, I get nervous. So I go in a day before, and I love it, because the ports that cruise ships sail from are some of the most interesting cities in the world. So it's no hardship. The second thing I'd say is if you're in a cruise port, whether it's a day call or you're embarking, and the weather looks really dicey, it's hurricane season, and you're hearing about a storm, don't go too far from the ship. Keep an eye on it. Take a ship-organized shore excursion if they're available, because you generally know that they're going to wait for you. They're going to have some kind of communication for you. You want to protect yourself a little bit more in this time, these kind of situations, than you normally would worry about. And the third thing is, and this is something we hammer over and over on cruisecritic.com, is buy travel insurance. Not only travel insurance, but buy travel insurance with weather coverage.
Some excellent wisdom. Carolyn, thanks for taking some time to educate our travelers today. There's a couple of takeaways from here. Not everybody handles the difficult situation the same. And the other thing is that remember that in weather-related situations, nobody has really any obligation to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that you've got to consider. You see all these folks who are standing around. It's kind of like people who expect, there's a natural disaster and the government will be here to help. Well, eventually, yes, but perhaps not right at that moment. So it's important that people do their homework. And your little wisdom there about going in a day early is probably one of the best things that people who go on cruises could do for themselves. They eliminate a tremendous amount of stress and hassle. Carolyn, we'll be back and talk with you again in a few weeks.
Thanks for asking. I love talking with you guys.
Thank you very much. Carolyn Sprencer-Brown from Cruise Critic. You can go to travelguysradio.com and get a link to the article on Carolyn's website that I know if you are a cruiser, you absolutely will become a fan of this website. I'm not a huge cruise fan, and I am a fan of it. Thanks, Carolyn.
Thank you.
All righty.
We are the Travel Guys. This is News Talk 1530 KFBK. This is Tom Romano. We are the Travel Guys in entertainment on News Talk 1530 KFBK. And across from me, of course, is Mark Hoffman from Sports Leisure Vacations and Clayton Whitehead from Sports Leisure Vacations. And, you know, I know you listen to this program, and I have thought this for many, many years when I've been around Mark and Clayton. My gosh, what a job. These guys get to go on vacation and they get to call it work. But then again, we stop and kind of analyze exactly what that is. And you got to know that there's a lot of responsibilities. But, you know, I think a lot of people don't know what goes into being a tour guide and a tour director and doing what you guys do. So I wanted to take a moment in the show and give our listeners an opportunity to go behind the scenes, if you will, in your lives and with Sports Leisure Vacation and kind of take a look at that and find out what it's like. Mark, now you started the company a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Possessed you back in the 80s to...
70s.
Back in the 70s, okay, to become...
1979.
Become a tour guide.
I worked for Mission Oaks Recreation and Park District, and a funny little tax law passed here called Jarvis Gann. And it capped in 1978, capped all the property taxes, and that had an impact on people who worked at places like park districts because it suddenly meant that their revenues were capped. And so some serious decisions had to be made about who stayed and who didn't, and I wasn't one of the ones who made the cut. And I ran adult sports leagues for the park district. They hired me as an independent contractor, had a lot of time on my hands, started taking people to baseball games in San Francisco. One of the bus drivers one day said, hey, you should try this kind of service on the gambling junkets to Reno and Tahoe with a tour director and refreshments on the bus. People would probably like that. Very quickly when we did that, our clientele shifted from younger people who went with us to the baseball games to more retired folks who went with us to the casinos. And frankly, we found that to be a much more desirable demographic. They didn't barf on the bus as often. And it's they could actually find the motor coach after the ball game, things like that. So they didn't use the bus as an excuse to be a public inebriate. And so they were much more desirable as a clientele. There was an instant connection there. And then they started saying, why don't you take us to this place and why don't you take us to that place? And pretty soon we were going to Washington, D.C. and to the World's Fair in Vancouver in 1984. And then it just kind of went from there. Clayton, how do you answer people when they say to you, what's it like to go on vacation for a living?
Well, I just have to say I have the greatest job in the world and have for 30 years and 2 months now. For me, it all started when I was in junior high school, mid-70s. Two incredible things happened. One, I went to a church revival and became quite convinced that I was put on the planet to work with senior adults. And then the second awesome thing that happened is a little show came on television called The Love Boat. And I decided right then and there that I wanted to be Julie the cruise director when I grew up.
We were just talking to Carolyn earlier in the program about before you got here about the
television shows.
Literally about television shows that had inspired people to travel.
Absolutely.
So there's an example.
Love Boat came up. Absolutely.
Love Boat. Love Boat put me on the map. I wanted to be Julie the cruise director. I wanted to take care of my little old ladies and gentlemen that I love so much. I wanted to see the world, and I wanted to fall in love every week.
Now, how did that work out for you?
How did that work out? Let's see. Fast forward to the early 80s. I'm a student at the University of Georgia, which is my my hometown, Athens, Georgia.
Would have never guessed.
Yeah. And the vice president, who I knew, cornered me to be an orientation leader. So I started giving bus tours to fellow students and then to the Alumni Society. And one thing just led to another. So 30 years I've been on buses. I never have gotten on my ship. But maybe in the next life I'll be a cruise director.
You've taken cruises. But
I've
you
taken
just
cruises.
Haven't. Yeah.
And you know what? It's not my favorite kind of travel.
Yeah.
I don't care to be captive.
I'm a small ship. I'm very much a small ship cruiser.
Small ships I much prefer, or like the river cruises in Europe, things where you can get off a lot. But
yeah.
I'm very active. I like to run, bicycle, things like that. And to be in a big ship on the open seas for days on end, just it's a little captive for me.
Mark, what's the most satisfying part of your job? And then I'll ask you the same question, Clayton, so you have an opportunity to think about it.
The most satisfying part of my job is when we have lunch, we eat somewhere or we go someplace and we come out and people say, how did you find that? How did you ever find that? So I'm really an off the beaten track guy, and I take great joy in discovering an incredible off the beaten track place.
Yeah, bad, yeah.
And then the other joy is in when you get the opportunity to take people there,
mm-hmm.
and you get a second lift because
sure.
then you get to share that. And if they take it the same way that you did, which doesn't always happen. I mean, you know, when Guy Fieri is on Drive-Ins, Diners, and Dives and he bites into all that food, it can't all be that delicious all the time.
Right.
And so, yeah, sometimes people don't always see it the same way that you do. But when they do, it's just this incredible feeling that you've taken people someplace and shown them something and enriched their lives in some small way that they might not have done on their own.
Yeah, that's great. And I think a lot of people could identify with how that would feel. Clayton, is it similar for you? Or?
Well, for me, the greatest thrill is taking a person to that which they call home, however they might define it. Sometimes I've taken people to the place where they were born, a city they hadn't been to in 30, 40, 50, 60, 70 years. I've taken people to European countries where their family came from. Perhaps they'd never been to Ireland or Italy or Greece or whatever. But knowing that their heritage was from that place just fills them with all kinds of emotions. And then also taking people to spiritual homes. For example, taking groups to the Vatican, and very often a trip to Italy obviously would attract a lot of Catholics. And just seeing their reaction to being, you know, at ground zero of their faith. It's a remarkable opportunity to create these experiences for people and then to be able to witness them when they happen.
You know, Tom, I think one of the other things, too, is that we have been blessed with, at our company, at Sports Leisure Vacations, we have the most amazing people who travel with us. And so not only do we have this great job, I have a terrific staff, but I have these most amazing clients to travel with, to share these experiences with. And you just, you know, travel isn't as much fun. Well, I suppose some people enjoy traveling by themselves, but travel is something that is a lot more fun if you can share it with people.
Absolutely, yeah.
And oftentimes we will be on the road, and I'll go into the little hotel. Maybe we're in, you know, I'm an off-the-beaten-track person, so I'm more likely to not be in a fancy place. And I'll go into the hotel front desk in the morning to pay the bill. And sometimes the desk clerk will say, boy, your folks just seem like they're having a terrific time. You have the nicest people traveling with you mm-hmm. that we've had in here in a long time. And mm-hmm. to me, that's really one of the biggest compliments that people can pay you is if you can create a circumstance where people are having such a good time that rubs off on the people around them, then that's when I can really stand back with a real smile on my face. But sometimes it's something as simple as – I remember we were up in Victoria on Vancouver Island, north of Victoria, in Tofino. It was a little town on the Pacific coast. And it was a beautiful day, and we got back early from our sightseeing tour, and we broke out kites. And this lady who – this is Harriet Orchard I'm talking about. Harriet was we were flying a kite, and Harriet was watching, and I walked over and put the kite in her hand. And she was standing there, and she had this huge smile on her face. And I think Harriet was – I won't even guess her age, but she's a grandmother and or a great-grandmother. And she was standing there, and she just had a smile ear to ear, and she said, you know, I haven't flown a kite since I was probably 12 or 13 years old. And you could just see at that moment in time that in that simple little circumstance that you had really just made a defining moment for somebody. They were going to remember that for the rest of their life.
How passionate, how great. Here again, I can feel the emotion, and I know our listeners can too, that this is something that I bet a lot of folks wish they could do. Now, with that being said, there's got to be everybody. It's just not always a big party. There's a lot of work involved and a lot of challenges. What do you find to be the biggest challenge of taking a large group of vacationers on these excursions?
What would you say, Clay? Would you say sitting in the Chicago airport with people staring at you?
I don't even want to tell people how many times I've spent the night at the O'Hare Hilton. I have a regular room there. Let's just put it that way. Obviously, travel is an inexact science, like most sciences. Mm-hmm. And it's getting more and more inexact with the weather ever changing and hard to predict. But the neat thing about our company, and I hope all bona fide tour operators out there, is that you don't just have the skill of the one person who's traveling with you representing the company, but you have the company that stands behind them. So usually when there is a problem on the road, my staff knows about it before I do, and they're already trying to fix it. So by the time I'm aware that something's gone awry, I call the office. People are already buzzing around, no matter whether it's a Saturday or the middle of the night. People are buzzing around. People are working on it. So, you know, we're accountable to our people in every single level, and we will eventually get them home.
I guess that's one thing, Tom, at Sports Leisure Vacations is that we take really seriously. This probably is going to sound a little bit corny to people who are listening on the radio, but we're in the dream business. We make people's dreams come true for a living. Big dreams, little dreams, dreams in between. Like Clayton said, taking somebody back to their hometown or taking them to a place where their grandson lives or just creating that special little moment that happens sometimes just spontaneously. But, if there's only one journey, this is one heck of a way to spend one's life journey. I mean, it just is. We have terrifically wonderful people to travel with, and you get to be creative. That's one thing about owning your own company is that you don't have to answer to as many people. If you have a great idea or something that you want to do, you just do it.
You know, a lot of people take a look at how the economy has been and so forth over the years, and especially recently, and probably wonder, how have you survived all these years?
Wow. How have we survived all of these years, Clayton?
Our clients.
We work hard, we give good service, and we have the most wonderful people who travel with us. I mean, that sounds repetitive, but that really is true.
I think it was Mr. Sears or maybe Mr. Roebuck who said that 80% of his sales came from 20% of his customers. And with us, I'd say about 90% of our sales come from about 10% of our customers. I mean, we love them all and we need them all, obviously, but we have this incredibly loyal core group that go on a tour a quarter or a tour a month. And, of course, you get to know them personally. And right, wrong, or otherwise, when you're sitting at your desk creating a program, you create it with people in mind. I mean, mm-hmm. I think a playwright mm-hmm. probably does that, with a particular actor or actress in mind. But you create tours with people in mind. You're like, this is a tour that Lillian would really, really like. Or this is a tour just made for George. And then, when they sign up and you have them, it's I don't know. It's amazing. It's just amazing that the synergy that's on one of our tours, when you've got 20 or 30 or 40 like-minded people together, all out having fun, they share some commonalities. Obviously, they're all from Sacramento. They all liked the destination. They picked that particular tour. But this this pleasurable synergy that comes out of it is amazing.
It's really interesting how ideas evolve. We were on the road last spring, and somebody asked me about going to the Boston Pops, and of course they're going to be on the program here in just a little bit. We're going to be talking about the Christmas show, and that's what we were talking about. And we're sitting around a dinner table with six or seven of our travelers, and by the time the dinner is over, we have created a tour on the East Coast, which indeed is the one that we'll mention a little bit later, that includes an opportunity to see the Boston Pops Christmas show. And literally it came one of our biggest pluses is that we still go on the road. We go out with our clients. And I'm really proud of the fact that our company doesn't send people places without going there first. I mean, we'll go and spend a lot of money to make sure. Clayton is leaving in a couple of weeks on a trip that's going to Poland and Prague. I went all the way to Prague last spring to make sure that the hotel was what I wanted. And when it wasn't, I changed it. And that costs a lot of money, but now I know that when our customers get there, they're going to get exactly what it is that they paid for, and whatever their expectation was, unless something really out of my control happens, they're going to be very happy.
Mark and Clayton, making people's dreams come true, little ones, big ones, every day with Sports Leisure Vacations. Very cool, very wonderful opportunity to get a little background from you guys. Thanks. We are the Travel Guys. This is what we do right here on News Talk 1530 KFBK.
Going places with that sports leisure flair. A world of adventure, and we take you there.
And this is your Travel Club member update for Sunday, September the 4th. Our new Sports Leisure Vacations Tour Catalog is now available. You can get your copy if you're a Travel Club member. Your copy is in the mail and on its way to you. If you're not a member of our Travel Club, you can go to sportsleisure.com or you can call us on Monday morning at 361-TOUR. That's 361-8687 and get your copy of the 2012 Sports Leisure Vacations Tour and Vacation Catalog. It is a beautiful 64-page, four-color catalog, and it'll show you vacations all over the planet, everything from Costa Rica to New Zealand to Weaverville, California. 361-TOUR or sportsleisure.com. Our lucky Travel Club winners for this week are Margaret Iske and Anna Marie Malone. Margaret Iske and Anna Marie Malone, you have until the close of business Tuesday to call the Sports Leisure office and claim your prize, which is $100 in tour cash. And that is your Sports Leisure Travel Club update for today.
We are the Travel Guys and Entertainment here on News Talk 1530 KFBK, and it's that time to talk about the entertainment portion of what we do. And gosh, we're fortunate enough to have a special guest on the line that Clayton and Mark have known for some time, and that must mean it has something to do with the Boston Pops.
Yes. Every Christmas, the Boston Pops Orchestra does a Christmas program in Boston. Imagine that. They're the Boston Pops, so they do it in Boston.
They used to do it here. I saw it. Arco Arena.
Well, and so now you've got to go all the way to Boston to see it. And because Sports Leisure Vacations goes on occasion, and we will be back there this year seeing the Boston Pops at Christmas time, go to sportsleisure.com or Travel Guys Radio if you'd like to find out more about our trip. But we thought maybe there might be some folks who wanted to go on their own or might be back in Boston during the holiday season. And so we have asked Helen Brady from the Boston Pops Orchestra to join us today. Hi, Helen.
Hello, guys. It's great to talk to you again, my travel buddies at the trade shows.
Hey, it's nice to have you. You are just finishing up with Tanglewood and everything. Let me ask you something with the storm and everything. How did that affect? Is your season already over out there, or did you have some impact?
Oh, well, we did have a little impact. It was the first concert to ever be canceled in the history of Tanglewood, so over 75 years or so. So we did do that. We did have a group out there, or several groups, I should say, but we entertained them regardless in the hotel room with games and fun things. So we kept everybody busy in the rain.
So you were able to keep everybody safe.
We kept everybody safe. But yeah, it was historical in that we did have to cancel the show, and it was just strange because, you know, there was no snow. So it was odd.
So soon the tickets are going to go on sale for the Holiday Pops season at the Symphony Hall. For folks in Sacramento who have only seen or heard the Boston Pops Orchestra, tell us a little bit about it.
Well, the Boston Pops actually was born out of the Boston Symphony back in 1885 when our founder, Henry Lee Higginson, he proposed a new series in the hope of recreating the ambiance of the Viennese concert gardens. And this also provided some summer employment for our BSO musicians. And so that is how it came about. And for 45 years, it actually was led by various European conductors until 1930, when Arthur Fiedler took over. And he was there until he died, actually. And then we got John Williams, the amazing composer, and did all those music scores. And he really brought in more repertoire and built it even further until he retired in 1993. And then we got Keith Lockhart, and he's our leader. And he's just a wonderful guy to see. He brings so much life and whole different element to the Boston Pop. So we've been lucky. And really, since it started, there have only been 20 conductors, believe it or not. So,
well, Helen, I have to tell you,
a testament to a great job, huh?
Right on. I have to tell you, I'm the president of the Keith Lockhart fan club out here on the West Coast.
Huge, well, I heard that
huge
about
fan.
You.
Yeah, you know, I've bought more than one autographed item at your fundraising auction every year. Where did Keith come from, though? I don't know his history at all.
Oh, he's from upstate New York, and we found him. Actually, he was assistant conductor, I believe, for the Cincinnati Orchestra under Eric Kunzel. And I remember when he came out and auditioned a few times for the Boston Pops and among some other great conductors that were coming in between 1993 and 1995. And I just remember seeing Keith Lockhart get up there, and I said, that's the one.
Yeah, he is definitely the one. Is he as much fun in real life as he is on stage?
He is, and he's just a terrific guy. He's one of the brightest people I know. He can speak to any person, and he finds a connection with them, and he's just truly a remarkable person. Really proud to work for a person like him.
Helen, I'm sure it could be said by many that the Boston Pops Orchestra is perhaps the most popular orchestra in the country. It certainly is one of the best known.
Yeah.
And this Christmas show, which I was fortunate enough to see, I guess 3 years ago it was now. And I confess it was something on my bucket list. I didn't want to just see the Pops. I wanted to see the Pops at Christmas time in the Symphony Hall. It was worth the wait. Just that night at the Symphony Hall was really an experience. The sounds, it felt so much like the holiday season. We should tell our listening audience that the Boston Pops Orchestra has a wonderful way at Christmas of doing the 12 Days of Christmas song in a way that you just can't even imagine.
Oh, they really, they have different narrations. They do Twas the Night Before Christmas. They do How the Grinch Stole Christmas. Yes, Virginia, there is a Santa Claus, and we've had some really cool guests get up there. And we had a real treat last year, and so did the audience, when Shaquille O'Neal got up, and he guest conducted Sleigh Ride. And what a treat.
Okay.
You could have seen this man up. I mean, he's bigger than life, and he got up, and it was just amazing. And just an aside, when I first started working at the Boston Pops many moons ago, I began there as a temp during Christmas Pops. And I remember walking in saying, I'm never going to leave this building again.
Helen, because, so are tickets hard to get?
That you really do have to start exploring that now, actually. Group sales, we're filling out group sales orders right now. And September, actually they can begin calling
September the 12th.
The 12th, and in order by phone, 888-266-1200.
We'll put a link on our website at travelguysradio.com to the Symphony website, and so that you'll be able to, if you're interested in getting tickets. And thank you, Helen, because
we
already have our tickets for our group. Sports Leisure Vacations has a trip going to Washington, D.C. Now, I'm just going to brag a little bit here. This trip is going to Washington, D.C. to see a Christmas concert at the Kennedy Center. Then we are going to New York City to see the Rockefeller Center Christmas tree and the Rockettes. Then we are coming up to – that's high-speed rail between those two cities. Then we're coming up by coach to Boston to see the Boston Pop Symphony. So that is quite a combination, I think.
Oh, I want on that trip.
Yeah, only four seats left. Go to travelguysradio.com and click on the link for the Sports Leisure Christmas concert trip. But if you're going on your own, then what we're telling folks is you got to get your tickets early.
You have to get your tickets early. It does sell out. It's only a few weeks you know, of a season for us. As you know, December isn't a very long time away, and it our season is 2.5 weeks long, and it's a great, you know, we can't promise you snow. We always hope for snow. It's the one month where we New Englanders love snow. We love it. Walking into the pop, and it's just, it's magical, and it's often something that families do every year. Sometimes I think the bucket list becomes an annual for many people that do come in. So.
I have no doubt for folks who are lucky enough to be in that region, I'm sure it is an annual affair.
We have the real Santa Claus, just so you know.
I feel blessed that we just get to come on an occasional basis. Helen Brady from the Boston Pops Orchestra, thanks for joining us on the Travel Guys.
Thank you so much. Take care.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
There we go. We are the Travel and Entertainment Guys. Make no mistake about it, right here on News Talk 1530 KFBK. Well, that just about does it for the Travel Guys. Thank you for joining us. Remember, all we ask is an hour a week. You have yourself a fabulous Labor Day weekend. See you next time.